Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Face Connecticut. I'm Morgan Cunningham on WTIC News Talk 1080, 96.5 TIC, and Light 100.5 WRCH. Our guest this morning is Paul Kidwell. He is the Senior Vice President Policy at the Connecticut Hospital Association. The group has a lot of issues that it wants to see addressed coming up in the 2024 legislative session. We're going to dig into a number of those issues, why they're important, and some solutions that they're hoping might get passed by lawmakers when they go into session. Good morning, Paul. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Morgan. Thanks for having me. Look forward to the conversation.
Absolutely. You know, you guys were just recently talking about a number of these issues, and so I want to run down some of them and get a little more information about what it is you guys are looking to have seen done in a number of areas. And one of those areas is Medicaid reimbursements. It's something that we hear a lot about in healthcare and medical, and it's definitely an issue that's impacting facilities in Connecticut. Let's just start with the basics, Paul. How exactly do these work and impact Connecticut hospitals?
Sure, and thanks for the question. And I think folks around the state have probably heard about it, not just because of healthcare, but in all sorts of human services areas as well. So Medicaid is one of our largest insurance companies in the state. It insures low-income individuals in our state, just like Medicare insures an older population, and commercial insurance insures many, primarily through employment. And what we've seen over the last number of years is the reimbursements or the payments we're receiving from Medicaid to provide healthcare services is not keeping pace with how much it costs to actually provide those services. So, the state recently put out a report that indicated that Medicaid pays about 62 cents for every dollar of care provided. And if you think about that and you think about Medicare, which pays about 74 cents for every dollar of care provided, healthcare providers, including hospitals, need to figure out how do you make up the difference in cost. And and why this issue is important universally, not just to those individuals covered by Medicaid, but it's also important to individuals covered by employer-sponsored insurance, because what happens is healthcare providers go to the commercial health insurance companies where we negotiate for payment rates, and the underpayment in those two state and federal programs really put a lot of pressure on those negotiations to make up that difference. And so what we've been saying to the state is we want to be partners in how do we start to make sure that Medicaid payments are really keeping pace with how much it actually costs to deliver care. So, we're going to be continuing that drumbeat with the state legislature this year.
What do you think it will take in order to get them to hear that, in order to get a little bit more money toward those reimbursements? What do you think you guys will have to do in order to make that a convincing case for them?
Yeah. So one, I think it's we really highlight patient access. We want to make sure every patient in Connecticut has access to the same services, whether you're insured by Medicaid, Medicare, or commercial insurance. So it's for us all about access, and in preserving access means ensuring that the payments are keeping pace with the cost. Broader than that, I think we want to talk about Medicaid and how we can use it to support the health of our community. So how do we switch our mindset a bit to say, how can we keep people, say, who have diabetes and they need to manage that diabetes, how can we keep them healthy in the community so that they're not needing the more expensive hospital services? We think there are lots of opportunities there beyond, increasing payment rates is certainly very important, and we're going to be asking for it. But we also want to talk about how do we keep folks really healthy in the community so we can really start to decrease the pressure on those really acute care services that are by nature more expensive.
I want to ask a question, and maybe this is more in theory than it is practical, but let's say that the Medicaid reimbursement is that $1 and it's not lagging by 25 cents or 35 cents or whatever it's lagging by. You know, would that ever be possible? Is that something that would help hospitals, or would you still be struggling in that area if it were full?
That's our goal. So our goal is that the payments cover the cost of providing the care. And so, you know, obviously when it's 62 cents of on the dollar, that's, we have a long way to go. But we think that in all instances, you know, the payments should cover those costs. So that's our goal. We think it would be wonderful to make some incremental steps towards that goal. But certainly that would relieve an enormous amount of financial pressure on hospitals in the state. Just keep in mind, last year, those unpaid Medicaid bills, or that difference between what it costs and what we got paid, was over $1 billion last year. And so if we are able to close that gap, certainly that would really lessen the financial strain on the hospitals.
And the hospitals are the ones that are on the hook for paying that, correct?
That's right. That's just care that is not compensated. And so, again, we use all the levers that we have in order to try to make up that difference, certainly, you know, reducing our costs and being as efficient as we can is part of that equation. But there's only so much efficiency, you know, to be gained. And so it certainly, like I said, puts enormous financial strain on the hospitals. And, you know, we recently put out a report on the health of the industry, financial health of the industry. And in 2022, you know, hospitals were in a negative position, right? They were losing money universally across the state. So Medicaid is one piece of that, a really important piece of that. And that's why we're so vocal about it.
This is definitely a serious issue, Paul, no doubt, because we're talking about not millions of dollars, but in billions of dollars in debt. And that's just in Connecticut. And this must be an issue that you guys are hearing about with partners across the country as well.
Absolutely. It's not just a Connecticut issue. I mean, in Medicare, certainly Medicare underpayment plays an important, you know, role. But Medicaid is a state-federal partnership. So the state controls primarily the program. And so that's why they have such an important role in how the program is financed and how much it pays.
What other kinds of debt problems are hospitals facing in this day and age, other than the issue of not being reimbursed for full Medicaid amounts?
Yeah, I think two things. So one, just like, you know, families over the last couple of years in Connecticut have experienced, inflation has been, you know, on the cost side, something that hospitals have been grappling with. And if you think about all of the inputs that go into running a hospital, you think about labor costs, and you think about energy costs, and supplies, and drug costs. All of those things have been increasing rapidly, and so when reimbursements don't keep up with those inflationary costs, you either run certainly debt, and or you have to start to trim, you know, on the cost side. So that has been a really significant factor. The other is we see how people's insurance is designed in a way where they are more responsible than ever before for a part of the cost of their care. So I think many people have now what are termed as high deductible health plans, where individuals and families have to pay a lot more out of their pocket before insurance kicks in. And so that certainly puts a strain on individual and family finances. And it also, you know, when people are trying to make choices about, you know, certain bills they pay, there's a lot more a lot more hospital bills that people just aren't able to pay. So we work, very aggressively in making sure that our financial assistance policies are applied so that, people who qualify can get reduced bills or payment plans. But, you know, certainly the rise in those high deductible plans not only affects individuals and families, but also affects how, the finances of hospitals as well.
I'm talking with Paul Kidwell. He is the Senior Vice President of Policy with the Connecticut Hospital Association, and they are outlining a bunch of their legislative priorities for 2024, things that they're hoping that they can get the state legislature to correct in some way. And while we're talking about finances, this kind of transitions us into another issue, but it is related. You guys are also experiencing staffing issues as well. The cost of labor has gone up as well. And so could you talk a little bit about the staffing and labor issues that hospitals in Connecticut are feeling now?
Yeah, and it's priority really number one. We, for years now, and exacerbated by the last couple of years in the pandemic, have found it more difficult to find the professionals that we need in the hospital setting. So that starts with nursing, but it runs the gamut of all of those clinical and non-clinical professionals that really are so important to running the hospital. We think there are opportunities. We've worked very closely with the state and the Office of Workforce Strategy at the state to think about and identify how we can get folks trained quickly in the technical fields. And so we think that there are plenty of really great opportunities in working in healthcare. And so, one, how do we train people more rapidly to get them in? And then once they're in, how do we identify for those employees opportunities to grow in the field? So showing people really strong, here's the pathway. If you want to come in as a surgical technician, but you want to pursue your nursing degree, here's the steps that you should take, and here's how we're going to help you along the way. It also means we're working really hard with our education partners in the state colleges and the community colleges and the private universities on how do we get more teachers in the classroom for these professions. And we have really wonderful clinical professionals who may also be able to teach. And so how do we partner to get those folks into the classroom? And then finally, how do we attract, or just make kids in the state, as early as high school, aware of opportunities in the future in healthcare. So, exposing them to the types of jobs and career opportunities, exposing them to the types of education that they should pursue if they want to be in healthcare, really a huge focus. I really want to emphasize, we want to make sure that once folks, are in the field and all of the, wonderful employees we have around the state, that they feel safe in the workplace. Working in a hospital can be a challenging environment. And what we've seen over the last couple of years is the anger and the violence against healthcare employees has reached just completely unacceptable levels. And so, we're taking steps to make sure that that our employees feel safe. We late last year adopted across the state a statewide code of conduct that says to patients and families that, we need a respectful environment. If we're going to provide care, we're going to treat everyone with respect when they come into the hospital, but we need the same respect from them as well. And so we're taking some, aggressive steps to make sure that, the hospitals are as safe as they possibly can be for our employees and patients.
There are opportunities for people to get into nursing and healthcare in Connecticut. There are new programs at UHeart. There is also a new program at Eastern Connecticut State University for nursing. So we're seeing that there are universities and schools that are making the investment to get nursing programs and updated programs if they already had one in existence. I mean, we heard about the situation with Stone Academy last year and how that's left students kind of high and dry and trying to figure out a course of action, and that's unfortunate. But we are seeing that there are opportunities popping up out there. And so how are hospitals partnering with schools to make sure that their message that, hey, we have opportunities here and this is what you should consider out to possible students and people who are interested in going to those classes?
You know, we have so many really experienced clinical professionals. How we're working with the universities and the schools to say, how can we get those individuals into teaching positions in your classroom so that we can teach even more nursing students and frankly then expose them to the value of the hospital setting and what some of those opportunities are like. So those partnerships have been really close for many years. They're growing, every year as we seek new opportunities to really expand the number of nurses that we're educating here in the state. And, you know, the most important thing is we want to make sure they remain in the state once they graduate. We think Connecticut obviously is a wonderful place to practice medicine and to be involved in healthcare. And so what are all the other things that we might need to do to make sure that they remain in the state?
Is there anything that can be done legislatively to help retain existing employees? People have certainly heard about burnout, Paul, that people who've been in the medical field for a long time, and especially having gone through COVID, they're feeling perhaps forgotten or left out. And, you know, that's not necessarily the case. However, that's how they feel. And so what can be done to help retain people who are really skilled in medical?
Yeah. So, certainly as, the work environment is something that we are focused quite a bit on. And that starts with safety. But that also starts with thinking about how do we create, models of care where healthcare employees feel supported. That they have some flexibility to make sure that not only can they balance work, but all the priorities, important and critical priorities outside of work and with family, and understanding as new employees come into the field, what are the things that they're expecting as individuals just entering the workforce. Certainly, some of that is financial assistance. Some of that is opportunities to grow in the field. Some of that is flexibility. So, that's something that we're adapting to, year over year over year. Outside of the four walls of the hospital, we also are supportive of creating an environment in the state where people want to live. That housing is attainable and affordable. That transportation is available, that, things like childcare are attainable for families. So it's, it's for us, it's a real holistic approach to make sure that we're doing all we can, as hospitals, but that we're supporting those initiatives outside of our walls that encourage individuals to stay in state.
Paul Kidwell, my guest this morning on Face Connecticut, Senior Vice President of Policy with the Connecticut Hospital Association. Paul, you've mentioned the S word a few times, safety. And it's something that's at the forefront of a lot of lawmakers' minds, I know, ever since Joyce Grayson's tragic death while working as a home health care employee visiting a halfway house in Willimantic, killed last October. And so what's the talk in the legislature and among lobbyists and healthcare professionals trying to come up with something, some kind of enforcement to prevent that from happening ever again?
Yeah, it is, I think, certainly in hospitals, our number one priority with our employees is that they are safe and they feel safe. And so, we take a number of measures in the hospital setting, starting with, signage, et cetera, to make sure people understand the expectation, but also the consequence. Certainly, we do measures to harden the infrastructure. There are some instances where even we use metal detectors for people entering, especially the emergency department. We try to identify those individual patients that we think may pose a risk of harm to our employees and make sure everyone is aware of that while continuing to provide that expected and critical care. You know, one of the things that we have identified as an opportunity is when something does happen in a healthcare setting, when someone is attacked or injured, and we need to involve law enforcement. What steps can we take with law enforcement to make sure that those cases are prosecuted effectively, so that those individuals face consequence for anything that they have done? So we'll be working directly there. I think in the home health space, as you noted, the tragic death last year, there we certainly need to think about what are the additional measures we can take to ensure that individual healthcare workers entering someone's home are as safe as possible. And so, we'll be working with lawmakers certainly around there in that work. And again, we think there's a lot to do with law enforcement, with identifying individuals who may pose a threat to healthcare workers in not just the hospital setting, but beyond. And we know that lawmakers are focused on this issue, and we think it's an area of really important focus, and looking forward to be part of that conversation.
Paul, I've really enjoyed our conversation this morning on Face Connecticut. Paul Kidwell, the Senior Vice President of Policy with the Connecticut Hospital Association. We're down to our last few moments here. Is there anything that I might have missed?
Yeah, so thank you. And this has been a wonderful opportunity. One of the things that it seems a little esoteric to many people, but one of the things we'll be focusing on quite a bit is what in the state is called the Certificate of Need process. And it's a process by which if hospitals or any healthcare provider in the state want to make a change to services, or they want to add a service or move a building or create more access in a community, they have to get the approval from the state in order to do that. We think that process, it's long overdue for that process to be updated and streamlined. It's taking too long. It's costing too much. And really, for all of your listeners today, it's the impact is access to services in a community, or preserving certain services in a community. We think we're going to be very aggressively talking to lawmakers about that this year. We think that that CON, that Certificate of Need process, should be thought more of just like a administrative process, and more about how do we use that process to really continue to strengthen healthcare delivery in the state of Connecticut. And I think we've gotten too far away from that, and we want to get back to it.
I know, and I've been hearing about the delay in getting that merger approved with Waterbury, Rockville, and Manchester hospitals. And it doesn't seem like there's an end in sight in that process.
Well, that's certainly a very big example of what I think we think is some underlying issues with the process. So that's obviously the largest example. But this goes down to very granular levels about whether an office can be moved down the street. You need approval for things like that, and we think for our economic competitiveness, for the delivery of healthcare in Connecticut, we want to make sure that we have all the services that people need right here in Connecticut, and we think Certificate of Need, that process, should be enabling that work rather than hindering it.
Paul, I really appreciate our conversation. We should do another legislative-themed update at some point in the future. What do you say?
Absolutely.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.